Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
Thanks, and welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, where we're always ready to roll. If you're looking for insights and advice on athlete branding, you're in the right place. If you're a loyal listener, welcome back. And if you're a rookie or an elite athlete listening to your first episode, welcome to the team. I'm Greg Glenn, the Athlete Brand Advisor and founder and CEO of Pliable. In episode 3, we're talking about recruiting. This is a hot topic for high school and college-bound athletes. With us today is Derek Whitmore, former NHL player and current assistant coach of the Chicago Steel in the USHL. Derek, welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I love that intro. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And when we talk with Derek, there's a lot of things that he brings to the table that I think athletes are going to enjoy hearing today. And one of those things is, quite honestly, as we all know, Derek, no one has kind of a template for how to make it to the NHL, how to have a successful career and get through minor league hockey and the grind that it is. I remember when we were in the Portland Pirates organization together, you always struck me as someone who was very dedicated and also committed and smart about your process and your procedure. And I think it's something that a lot of athletes could benefit from. So let's talk about your path. Let's dive in on how you got started, even going back as a young kid.
Yeah, that's a funny story. So my older brother, 2 years older than me, he was, you know, playing hockey back in Rochester, New York, where we grew up. And I think I went to his practice or something one day. I want to say I was about 2 years old. I don't have much recollection of this. I just, you know, through my parents and what they've told me. But I guess I threw a really big temper tantrum when I wasn't allowed to go on the ice and be with my older brother. So this lady told my mom, she's like, if I find a pair of skates that'll fit Derek, will you let him skate next weekend? And my mom was like, yeah, sure, like, I guess so. And, you know, sure enough, we go back the following weekend and I had a pair of skates and I have no idea if they fit me or not, but I didn't really care. you know, I was on the ice, you know, trying to rip around. And I that's kind of, you know, where I fell in love with the game and grew up playing my minor hockey all through, you know, the Rochester Americans, you know, youth organization. And then, you know, by the time I was junior in high school is when I moved away from home for the first year and started my junior career, which, you know, found myself playing in Butte, Montana. So as a 16-year-old kid going from Rochester, New York, all the way out to Montana, you can imagine what the thought process was behind that. But I feel like at that point in my hockey career, I needed to get out of the high school hockey area. In Rochester, the midget program. And, you know, I was lucky enough to land on a junior team and played for a coach that gave me a lot of opportunity to develop as a young kid, as a 16, 17 year old. And then after that year, I spent 2 years in the USHL with Waterloo and Lincoln. And the USHL is a very, very competitive junior hockey league. And from there, I found my way to Bowling Green, where I played there for 4 years. And then senior year of college, was able to sign an NHL contract with the Buffalo Sabres and spent my first 4 years pro with the Sabres organization, which obviously you and I spent some time together in Portland when the affiliation was there. And then, yeah, kind of, you know, was lucky enough to have a 10-year professional career. You know, I played in some leagues over in Europe, you know, was very, very fortunate to play in the NHL for the Buffalo Sabres. I think it was my fourth year as a pro. You know, we'll never forget my time there. And then, you know, 2018 came back to North America and spent the season in Reading in the ECHL as like a player coach. I was the captain of the team. And, you know, had a really tough year that year and kind of, at that point, I think, you know, I was at the end of it, realizing, you know, I had a family now, my wife. It was kind of enough's enough. And I was able to, you know, play that year and not as many games as I would have liked to. And then after that season was over, tried like heck to find a job for the following year playing again, but some of the injuries I had just wouldn't allow for it. And that's when I found myself in coaching and, you know, officially started my post playing career in this, the fall of 2018 with the Bowdoin women's hockey program.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what was it like to make that decision to stop playing? Everybody kind of has this moment. It sounds like for you, you kind of had that. For you, you have a lot of other skills, but talk to me about making that decision and you know, going after what you are going to do, the next step in your career.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to my wife. As hard as it was for me to come to terms with it, you know, she saw the writing on the wall. And without her, like, telling me, hey, like, you got to work in the summer. You got to, you know, she put me in touch with Adam Nicholas, who's a very, very, you know, prominent skills instructor, player development guy. He's from Maine. So I used him as a player when I was playing, and I was able to work his camps in the summertime. And, you know, so I had the playing stuff, but then I also got the coaching aspect and helping, you know, young kids in Maine with Stride NB Hockey. So, you know, my wife was very adamant on making sure I wasn't just, I'm going to play hockey and that's it. And I give her a lot of credit. And, you know, she kind of put her foot down toward the end of that 2017, 2018 year and was like, hey, like, we're not going to do this anymore where, you know, you're playing in ECHL or you're whatever, want to go play in Europe for very little money. Like I, at that time, I think our daughter was 3 or 4. So, you know, credit to her for sticking to her guns and, kind of, I don't want to say forcing me into it, but making me realize it a little bit more, like, hey, like, enough's enough. It's time to move on. And, you know, they always say the cliche is like, you know, play the game like it might be your last, 'cause you just never know. And I guess that's the one thing for me that is tough to, even today, to think about, was like, I never got to go into a game that year when I was playing in Reading thinking it was going to be my last one, right? Because I was injured a lot and I hurt my back and then I couldn't come back. And I wanted to, but I knew physically, like, I just wasn't there. So I never got to, like, go into a game like at the end of the year, but like, this is probably going to be my last game. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard because, you know, you always want to, you never really plan for it. You never really think about it. But then when it happens and I really had no control over it because it was, you know, my body just was not cooperating. And you know, that was tough, but I'm very thankful that, you know, my wife was kind of there for me to help me get through it. And I'm very thankful for the opportunity I got with Bowdoin because, you know, I don't know what I would have been doing, if I wasn't able to get into coaching right away. And some people that stop playing pro sports, whether, you know, whether it's hockey, basketball, whatever it is, like, there's that time when you're done and you just really don't know what you're going to do. And it's tough, and it's tough to deal with. It's tough to deal with mentally, physically. You know, hockey's been such a big part of my life, and I was able to do it for a career for a decade. And, you know, now when that was gone, it was like, what do I have to do? But luckily enough, while I was playing, I made sure to keep contact with coaches, with players, with, you know, anybody that would, you know.
Yeah, you kept in touch with your network. Your network before you left is a smart move.
Yeah, and then I think that helps. And you talk to you know, companies, they love hiring former athletes, whether that's in sales, whether that's in, you know, marketing or whatever it is, like, you know, mortgage business, real estate, like companies like former athletes because of, I feel like the work ethic and the type of people that they are. So I made sure to make, you know, to keep my network open. And I think my network came to a forefront for sure when, you know, the coaching opportunities came.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I want to talk a little bit about your time, certainly during the pandemic and some of the recruiting. We see a lot of athletes with Pliable that come to us and wonder about the recruiting game. And obviously, you know, during COVID was a whole nother element and continues to be for some schools. Talk to me about recruiting for players in this day and age, and what to you was something you were looking for when you were recruiting?
So it's different. I think the biggest thing with recruiters is you have to find the right people. Whether I think there's so much value in finding, yeah, there's going to be some blue chip recruits that are just their talent level is through the roof. And, you know, maybe you let some character or some other issues slide, but for the most part, like, I think you really need to get to know these recruits. And if my advice to a potential recruit is, if you don't feel like you have a good relationship with the coach that is talking to you, if they're not asking about other things in your life, like if they don't know, you know, your parents or what they do, or if they're not fully invested, I feel like you can sniff that out. Mm-hmm. and don't be a part of that. Like, I feel like as you want to go and get yourself into a situation as a potential recruit where, you know, let's say I always would tell recruits, like, if hockey just for whatever reason wasn't an option anymore for you at this school, would you still be okay? And some people are like, yeah, I could see myself in this environment, like at this school with, you know, these type of people. And there's so much value in that. But, you know, recruiting during COVID was very hard because we couldn't have like the personal interaction with these athletes. And I think that's such an important part of it. Mm-hmm. Where you can sit down and have a coffee, or, you know, really like talk to a kid after a game, or, you know, have that interaction where it's not over a computer screen and you're not having to watch video on TV or stuff like that. Like, you can actually go watch them live. And then after the game, like, talk about it. And
well, that's one of the things too, I think, that's different about watching people on video, is when that you also can see their behavior away from the puck, you know. Yeah. That's so much of it. And so when you're just watching it through a video, you know, screen, or they get on the bench and all of a sudden, you know, they're throwing a little bit of a fit because, you know, they got taken off the ice, or they didn't make a play and they break their stick, or, you know, or it could be on the positive side, you know, they can anticipate, you know, where the puck's going, you know, 60 feet away. You know, there's elements there that I think are really kind of important to in-person recruiting.
It's a lot better. And like you said, the body language, whether good or bad, the interaction with teammates, yeah, the interaction with coaches, officials, you know, how they are talking to their teammates. Like, you know, obviously I haven't recruited for any other sports. I can only speak to hockey, but it's really important. It's just, how do they carry themselves? How do they carry themselves? Like, maybe you run into a group of players, like at a hotel lobby, like you're staying at the same lobby as the team. Like, are they holding doors? Are they, being polite? Like, just, you never know who's watching. And that's why I feel like, you know, when I was a player, like, I wanted to make sure that I carried myself like a pro, and I think I did a decent job of that for the most part. And I think it's really important for these kids to act the right way. I don't want them to give up their, like, if they have a personality, like, yeah, there's time and place, but we don't need, you know, every single person to be a robot. But I think there's a lot to the in-person side and being able to have like a face-to-face conversation and talk to parents, like physically, not just over a computer screen. And that was a big challenge during COVID for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. What kind of thinking about your career and thinking about recruiting as well, what are some camps or showcases specifically, or some advice you have for high school or kids playing junior? Where are they going to get the most exposure and the best kind of value out of trying to get recruited? Where were you always looking, you know?
So it's definitely a lot different from when I played at that level, when I was like a recruit, you know, being recruited by schools. Like I was playing in the USHL, which, I mean, if you can get into the league, there's a good chance you're going to get recruited by a Division I school. I don't know what the percentage is right now, but I mean, we've got a team of 26, maybe 27 players, and four of them don't have scholarships yet. Everyone else is a Division I commit. Like this league is phenomenal. But you know, the making your district team, going to, you know, festival camp in Buffalo is always a big thing. But again, that's, you know, you have to make the team for it's not just you know pay money, you go to the showcase. It's like a national camp, so that's a good way to get looks. But you know, I, again, different time, but I never really did a lot of the showcase stuff as a player. Like I spent my summers trying to play baseball and doing, you know, that whole different sport. Like I had to get away from hockey in the summertime. I mean, again, it was a different time back then than where we're at now. But I think if it's a camp where you look and see that there's going to be some, you know, good schools that, you know, have your interest or that you might be interested in going to, like, I mean, all these camps, they'll put out a brochure, post something on the website, like these coaches will be here, whether it's for a day or 2 days, whatever it is, like they'll run a practice here or there. You know, if you can get to those camps, I think there's some value in that, just where you can kind of get on a radar. Yep. But, you know, if you can't, so you can't afford that stuff, like some of it's luck to get recruited. You have to be in the right place at the right time. But, you know, just, you know, don't settle. Like, don't give up on thinking, oh, like I can't do it, or I won't get recruited. Like I can't go to this one, because you, like, it goes back to what I was just saying. You just never know who's watching.
Yeah. So I was thinking that, because you've obviously recruited the D1 level, the D3 level. You know, was there a time, you know, in either of those situations where you stumbled upon somebody you didn't even think you might stumble upon?
Yeah. And I think that's where, again, as a recruiter, you have to, it was definitely harder at Bowdoin, because there's a specific pool, right? That you're, when you're, it's women's hockey, it's Division III, it's a NESCAC school, it's Bowdoin. Like there's a lot of boxes that need to be checked that have nothing to do with the hockey.
Hockey,
case, right?
Yeah.
So like, we can go, you know, we can go to a tournament or a showcase and there'd be like 200 kids there, maybe five or six, you know, fit the profile that like could potentially be a player for us. And then it's like, all right, well, do we like them? Their style of play, like, does their style of play fit what we're trying to do here? And then you know, talk about characters, like stuff like that. And then on the men's side at the Division I level, I feel like you just never know. Like, you have to always be like, yeah, you might be watching a game for a specific player. Someone else catches your eye. It's like, all right, I need to find out more information about this guy.
Yeah.
And now what I feel like is going to be a big challenge at the Division I level is the transfers, where, you know, you can transfer now. And, you know, I feel like teams are going to have to almost over recruit, which, you know, like that's going to be a challenge. And now there's more leverage with the athlete. So if they're not happy with their current situation, you know, they're allowed to transfer. So it'll be really interesting to see where the college athletics landscape, you know, goes these next couple of years.
Yeah. And that's something we're seeing a lot, obviously, with Pliable and the athletes that we work with. You know, let's talk a little bit about name, image, and likeness, Derek. You know, that's changed the game as well for these athletes that can now go out and, you know, be in a commercial, get a brand ambassador deal with a phone company. You know, there's a lot of things they can do now. Talk to me a little bit, because as you said, also now it's like you almost have to keep your customers, if you will, happy. These coaches need to be kind of checking in more with their own team and making sure that they're happy. There's a lot of opportunities now. And it seems like there is, like you said, a shift, and there's going to be more power to the athlete here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I wish I was a college athlete. You know, in today's day and age, you maybe get a couple endorsement deals.
Yeah.
But no, again, it's so young and it's such a new, I guess, area as far as where NCAA athletics are headed. So I don't really, like, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I just, right. All I know is that coaches 100% are going to have to invest more in their athletes as people, not just as athletes.
Right. It's not just enough to secure them on the team. They got to keep them happy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah. Which is it fair? Probably not, but it's what is going to happen, right? You're going to have to do it. If you want to, you know, keep your athletes happy. And, I mean, it's no different in pro sports.
Yeah.
So yep.
That's a good point
where, you know, certain guys make a lot of money, and if they're not happy and, you know, they go talk to ownership group or whatever, like, am I saying that's right? No, but that's just what goes on. So I don't think there's a way to avoid that, but I think investing more in the personal relationship with your athlete, I think, is going to help some coaches retain more kids.
Yep. And then I like what you've said too about some of the athletes you're working with right now, obviously, with the Steel. What do you see is the biggest kind of adjustment an athlete needs to make to go to the next level? And let's use your example, obviously, with the Steel of, you know, is it putting on more, you know, muscle mass? Is it intelligence? Is it speed of the game and that kind of thing? What do you see as the big jump that kids need to make it from, you know, juniors to college?
I think it's a lot of the physical side, where some of these kids at the junior level have never really had a regimented training program yet, where, you know, these kids have always just at this level, it's like, yes, some of them are still in high school, but it's hockey all the time. You know, you go to college, like, now you have to do, it's about time management. You know, like, you have to make sure you're staying on top of your studies. You have to make sure, you know, you have to have a social life. You have to have your athletic life. You have to have your academic life. There's a lot of different moving parts, I think, at the college level, where you can't really prepare yourself too much. Like, you have to just kind of do it. I mean, you can, I guess, have, you know, a regimented day, and, you know, this time we practice, this time we lift, this time we, you know, do our film session. Like, you know, we have a pretty regimented schedule here in Chicago. But I think that's the biggest adjustment for these kids going from junior to the college level is the physical side, where, you know, you're an 18-year-old and there's some 23, 24-year-old men in college hockey. Like, that's a big gap, right? So there's some disconnect there, but also I think just you're dealing with so much more at the college level, and your season is, you're doing so much, it's so compact, right?
Yep.
Like at this level, we play games until, you know, if we go to the championship or the finals again, like we're almost in the end of June.
Yeah.
And we start, you know, at the middle of September, whereas college, you're starting in September and then your season's over like April, right? If you go to the national championship. So there's a lot more on a college athlete's plate than a player at the junior level.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then I always ask people, because of the company name Pliable, is in your career, can you think of a time where you've had to adapt or stretch or be flexible or, you know, kind of be pliable, as we like to say, whether it was, you know, going from maybe from your playing days to your coaching days or as an athlete, you know, trying to realize that you needed to change your training in any way? Has there been a time that you can remember that you've had to be pliable?
Yeah, I think like when I first turned pro, to when I retired, the training styles were just different. And, you know, like as I got older, I wanted to still be effective. And I had to change the way I trained and like focusing on more instead of moving, I guess, heavier weight, like how can I move better? And like you said, be more pliable. And a lot of that comes with, you know, stretching and mobility stuff and certain, the way you exercise and work out, you know, certain lifts. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have a pretty good trainer in Maine, you know, toward the end of my career that, you know, helped me, I guess, stay able to keep up with kids that were, you know, 10 years younger than me.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that's one of the best parts about being a competitive athlete though, is if you're not willing to adapt or change with your environment, you're just going to get rolled over. So I think you have to, you can't be so stubborn. Like, oh, this is the only way I'm going to do things. And I think you need to surround yourself with people that have that open mind, that it's not always, their way is not always the right way.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important piece.
We've obviously got a large listenership here in Maine. Who's that trainer you're referring to, Derek?
That is Pete Clark, and he runs Beyond Strength in Falmouth, Maine.
All right, cool. All right. Well, this has been great. I also wanted to talk with you. How can people get in touch with you, Derek, if they're interested in the steel or if they're interested in your career or, you know, can they find you on social media? Where's the best way for somebody to get in touch?
Yeah, no, I have all the, you know, try to keep up with the young kids these days. I have all the, I got my Twitter handle. It's at DWhitmore21. My Instagram is Derek W2121. You know, my email is on the Chicago Steel website. I think it's just dwhitmore@chicagosteelhockeyteam.com. I think, yeah, our website is Chicago Steel Hockey Team. That's, I mean, if anyone's listening in the Midwest or, you know, Illinois area and you haven't seen the Chicago Steel play, it'd be a pretty fun ticket to get. For sure. We got a lot of good players on our team.
I would love to come out there and check out a game. You know, I've been a lot of Barnes in my day and I take the opportunity whenever I can. So, and Chicago's a great city. You got to love being out there, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a ways away from the city. We're in a suburb, Geneva, Illinois is kind of where we, where our rink is.
Yep.
So we're not quite in the city, but I've been able to get down there a couple times. I've seen a couple Hawks games, which United Center is a beautiful building.
Nice.
It's huge.
a little bit different than the Cumberland County Civic Center back in the day.
For sure. Well, I still love going into that building though. A lot of good memories there.
Yeah, you and me both, of course, referencing our time with the Portland Pirates, which is when I met Derek. And very appreciative of his time here today. So I want to wish you the best of luck, obviously, this season with the Steel. Hopefully it ends in another championship. You've got a nice little routine going of doing that there. So, Derek, really appreciate the time.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. I hope the listeners enjoy it.
Absolutely. So, well, team, that's going to wrap up another episode of the podcast. Want to thank our production staff, our research team, and everyone who made today's show possible, including you, our listeners. I'm Greg Glenn. I'm glad you could tune in, and stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.